Hey, we're live again. Wow, it seems like I'm live every night. I'm trying to think about how many episodes I've had so far, and every night I kind of forget. I think this is episode 25. We started Pick Rep during this corona pandemic, and we're going to go till it's over with. I may be streamlining it down to, you know, 6 days a week rather than seven, just because I planned on doing 15 episodes, and now we're on 20-something. But as usual, I have a great guest tonight, and I have an awesome co-host. Kevin Sullivan is back from 21 Gun Podcast as my co-host. And tonight I have Hamidi Jassim, the Terrorist Whisperer. I started watching his movie tonight. Wow, man, he's got an awesome backstory. I'm really looking forward to hearing about it firsthand. But the book, the movie, everything is out there right now, The Terrorist Whisperer. And hey, let's just talk to him. Let's do it. What is up, guys? How you doing, man?
How you doing? Thank you for having me here.
Doing great. I feel like Hamidi should be on the bottom, get the bigger screen. I feel like I'm taking up too much room down here.
You know what's kind of weird about like geometry and stuff is you actually have the same amount of screen as all three of us.
You're right. It's like, man, one of those things. Cool, freak your kids out and take two glasses, a skinny glass and a fat glass, and show them how it's the same amount of water in each one.
So, Hamidi, I appreciate you coming on, man, especially short notice like this. I'm glad you came on here, man. And you have a great backstory, and I want to kind of get into that. But I also kind of want to talk about what you're doing now and all the other good stuff. But first, let's backtrack. You could not tell, talking to you, that, you know, you did not know English growing up. Your English is impeccable. I love it. But let's get into your backstory, man. Let's talk about your childhood and where you grew up.
I grew up in Baghdad, Iraq, you know, in Baghdad, grew up under Saddam regime, pretty much like, you know, growing up under Saddam regime is like, you can never compare it to an American childhood or any, you know, it's very different life. It's almost like living in North Korea. We were pretty much blocked from the whole world. We only have two TV channels. That was broadcasted to us by Saddam, and you couldn't really talk much at the house about what politics or who is in. So very much you were like born like a robot in that regime, and you didn't have much to say. So my life was really confusing in Iraq, especially my childhood. There was a lot of things that I had no answers to for a very long time.
Yeah, I can imagine. And one of the things you brought up too is about getting bullied by the regime. And I can imagine the power would get to their head and they would just pick on anybody that was disliked by, you know, just didn't look like them or sound like them or act like them as far as the authoritarianism. But can you talk about that a little bit, man? How that affected your long?
And truly, like everything that was happening in Iraq back in during the 90s, it was something like you just figured that, okay, I'm part of some war that's going on. I don't understand who is fighting who and why. But truly, things didn't resonate with me into how this government, how does government actually conduct its business with its own citizen? What kind of rights do we have as citizens in Iraq until I was about 12 years old? I went to prison at that age. I went to a local prison, which, you know, when you talk about prison, is not like you get arrested and you go to your local police state. It's not that. We have that, but we also have concentration camps, political prisons for people who are more anti-government. I unfortunately end up going to an anti-government compound, basically, and being marked as an enemy of the state. So I end up going to prison, got tortured, gave confessions that I didn't have. At that point of my life, that's when I realized that I am not living in a normal place, and that life here had no hope, and there was no way you were going to have a future in that country. So it was definitely an experience to open my eyes up to what I was facing growing up, as older I was getting, as into how serious the things that we were facing.
Well, that's one of the reasons I wanted you to go into your backstory too. And Kevin, I'll let you talk here in a few minutes, but I started the show just kind of give, it's like your daily dose of positive, but sometimes in order to get to the positive aspects of anything, you really need to look at, you know, the things that have affected you in the past, and you living a childhood like that, and then going on to serve your country, and not only serve your country, but also serve ours right alongside our soldiers and experience the same things they have. It kind of gives you a different perspective, and it gives our audience a different perspective on how you cope and how you cope with stress, how you cope with just everyday life, and just kind of the advice you would give people. And that's kind of what I wanted to hit on your backstory before we kind of chatted a little bit further.
Awesome. To be honest with you, I could never compare my life to someone. Like, if I was born here, born and raised in America, I think I would deal with things differently than I would have dealt with in Iraq. But once you're born in a war zone, it's a very different life. It's a very different style. You're pretty much brought up like war is just part of normal, and that's what you're used to. I think that what made me what I am today is just that I was born in a very different environment. That environment was an okay environment to me. And in that environment, there was no room to give up. There's no room to stop. You just had to keep going because you counted life by the day. And as each day you accomplished, you just kind of move on to the next day and the day after. So, you know, this is a very different life. I don't think if I would have dealt with the same situation the same way I did if I was born anywhere else in the world. But, you know, if you're talking about Iraq, Iraq had sanctions on it for 12 years. We lived a very tough life. So every day in that life was making somebody out of you that you're not aware who it was. And I guess that every hardship, every hard experience you go through, it teaches you tons of lessons, and it just makes you a much more stronger man.
Yeah, I can't even imagine growing up in a livelihood like that, where death is kind of like knocking at your door all the time, and how the anxiety must kind of subside after a while, but it's always there in the back of your mind. So, yeah, I think you had something. Kind of looking like you're ready to.
Oh no, I was just gonna say compare that to what we're going through now. I think there's a whole generation, maybe two generations of Americans. In fact, you could, I guess, look back to when the draft ended. So however that is, a generation and a half ago, where we really haven't had to make personal sacrifices, right? We really haven't had to wait in line at a grocery store or, watch where we're going and watch what we're doing. And suddenly this is thrust upon us. And a lot of people are acting like, this isn't supposed to happen to us. These things aren't supposed to happen to us. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, where you grew up, I was actually just talking to Scott Husing, who was telling me that it was commonplace for there to be one gas station 6 miles away for the entire area, and people go and wait, 6 hours in line just to get gas. So it's like we have this one extreme, and now we are seeing not even to that extreme, just a mild version of that. What are your thoughts on how we're taking this and how the Americans are reacting to this?
I think definitely it's a different life. You can tell right now with everything happening overseas, regardless of how bad it is, people are not losing their control. While we have people here that lost their control, pretty much they were hoarding food, fighting over toilet paper, where Iran was getting hit really bad. Iraq was getting hit really bad with coronavirus and all this going on. But we didn't have like people out of order. Because these people are used to, this is what they're used to. And, you know, America dealt with that back in the day when they were going through World War II, World War I, and all these wars that affected the economy, affected the nation itself. So it definitely is two different mentalities. I think we have it so good here, we don't realize how good we have it. And until you lose everything, that's when you really just can compare yourself to the rest of the world. But, this is why what makes America the best country in the world is because you have things that nobody has.
Now, that's the truth, man. And one thing about it is, too, like I love reading history books now, especially like going not pre 9/11 because I'm still alive then, but like pre World War II and the Depression, and now going back to World War I, pre World War I, and seeing what the world was like back then, because we are a relatively young country as a whole. And, every 100 years or so, we go through something that's just massive in scale. And this is it for us for this time. So, yeah, man, it's weird to see how different people react to it,
It's also important to hear it out of their voice. Like, look for those books written during World War One or during the Civil War and listen to their language and their, because you can, you know, fiction can, they can do their research, but nothing as authentic as actually hearing it from the people that that lived through it while they were living through it.
Yeah, there are a lot of habits actually you can find within that time or that generation, and specifically if you wonder here, there's something that I notice with elders here in America that reminded me of actually my situation in Iraq and how we really lived. And when I noticed that a lot of elders do not throw away leftovers, they save it. And that's something that got my attention, is that when we lived in Iraq under the section, there was no food that got thrown away. There was nothing that goes to the trash that could be eaten because food wasn't easy to get. So you saved kind of everything. And this is something that I noticed about the older generation here, that they save every little bit of thing they have, while the younger ones don't. They kind of just throw the food away. They don't think about it. So it's just, there's a lot of habits that you can see if you lived in a war and torn country, that there's a very similar habit. There's a generation of war, and that's how I look at it. So it's interesting to see here people in their late, you know, 70s, you know, late 60s, 70s, all the way up to 80s, they save every bit of food. They don't throw anything away. And they would act just very much like how I would act as an Iraqi for much, you know?
Well, it's funny because growing up, man, everybody's grandma had a bowl of tinfoil.
Yeah.
I just remembered. I forgot all about that.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, man, you keep everything. And, you know, it's not hoarding. It's keeping stuff that you know you're going to use somewhere.
Yeah.
It's really cool, man. So let's talk, man. Let's talk about the fun stuff now. Yeah, man. So we were talking about food. And we were talking about, I was over in Balad and so was Sully. And we were talking about how food is so much different in Iraq than it is here, man. And what's coming here? Well, let's talk about you coming here, man. What was that like?
Coming here for me was, I would say it was extremely difficult, because adapting from my environment to this environment was like completely insanity. I don't think it should have happened. There was no, and I believe that nobody should go through what I went through, because I came here, I was lost for a while. I think I was depressed for about 6 months, and I really didn't know what I was going to do. I couldn't go back to Iraq. I was pretty much done. That's it. I couldn't go back to Iraq, period. And there was no programs here for like intelligent assets or people who worked for the U.S. intelligence. I was a rare case. Many people in my case don't come alive out of what they do. I was just a rare case that happened to be. I was a lucky bastard that came out and lived, and nobody was prepared for it. So I came here. I had to figure everything on my own, period. And it was difficult. It was extremely difficult, because I came, you know, people who know my stories, I came out of being the most wanted intelligent asset in Iraq that every intelligent agency was utilizing against the enemy, to being all of a sudden in the most quiet environment ever. I mean, imagine going out of the Iraqi MOD, which was where all the high wanted terrorist organizations are operating, including foreign agencies, Iran, everybody is out there. And all of a sudden you go from being in a Fortnite game or Medal of Honor game, and then you find yourself in just a quiet environment. It was extremely depressing for me. I didn't know how I was going to live. There was nothing. And it took me about literally a year to understand how things worked. I didn't know a lot of things. And there was no, there's no program to prepare you to what you're facing. So I kind of was lost. It took me about a year and a half really just trying to figure out how things worked, how I can cross the street, what laws do I need to follow. It was just it's a lot of information you had to observe in a small amount of time.
Now, did you have anybody helping you out? Or you're just kind
of
like,
so when I came here in 2008, most of the people that I was serving with was still deployed overseas. I stayed actually with an officer who worked at the Pentagon and, you know, they worked from all day. So I was staying by myself. Mm-hmm. I had to wait, like, you know, for all my paperwork, doing things done. Yeah. But it was just different environment. You know, like I was not used to quiet. I mean, for me, Iraq was not a deployment. It was my country. And then I was at a five year war continuously day to day. Imagine being in war for 5 years and all of a sudden your environment change. And it's after 5 years of war, you find yourself in this really boring environment. Like I found myself like there's nothing. that I would do that would compare to what I was doing. So I realized at that point that my brain was not ready to go through this experience. And I know it was rare because Intelligent Assets dies within 3 to 4 months of service because they're working among enemy. Some of them might be a double agent. Some of them, there's a lot of horror stories when you dig deep into the Intel community, learning about what Intel assets do. And, you know, for me, I was just a rare case that, you know, a lot of people were shocked that I'm here. Perhaps that, you know, agents that I served under in 2005 were extremely shocked in 2008 when they found out that I was here in the US and I was still alive. So, you know, for me, it was just reconnecting. It was a really weird environment because I came here in 2008. I didn't know most of what their names were, who they really were, what their real identities are. It was just figuring things out. It was like you lived in the toilet zone. And that's how it was for me. I lived like in the toilet zone, and I was just twilight zone and just going through information, trying to figure out who is who and who these people really are. And trying to figure out the outcome of what I was doing in Iraq, because regardless of what I was doing in Iraq as an intelligence asset, I didn't know the meanings of anything that I was doing. I didn't know what the outcome of it was. And when I came to the US, it was like a year of just trying to figure out and connecting to what I was doing meant and what it did. And perhaps some of the things I was not able to see until about years later. So it was just a lot of puzzles that you lived around and you just didn't know how you can understand what we were doing. But the more time that I spent here in peace is the more I understood of what I was doing. And perhaps in 2008, I didn't think I was doing anything. I felt like, you know, it was just whatever. I didn't think of myself of anything. And I was just trying to figure out how to cross the street. That was my biggest worry.
Amazing experience, man. And I'm glad you actually got it documented. I'm glad you got it down on paper and you got it filmed, because we need history. And sure. Not just for our country, but for yours too, and for your family as well. And you do have a wife and kids now, which is,
I do.
That's gotta be, it's awesome, man. It's gotta be amazing to have them grow up in a time of, you know, relatively peace here compared to where you grew up.
Definitely. It's different worlds. You know, my kid today does not live the same way I lived, you know.
What's your favorite thing about America? Like what's the, your favorite thing that we do as a strange little weird culture that we are?
I don't think, like, you know, for me, I was so soaked in the American culture because, you know, working with Americans every single day. I mean, for me, the beginning of war in Iraq in 2003, I was more around Americans from 2003 to 2008 than I was around Iraqis. My interactions were around Americans more than I was around Iraqis. And perhaps I was understanding the American culture from where people come from. I would, by 2007, I was able to tell if someone was a Southern, if they were a Northern, if they were, you know, country side kind of people grew up in the country, if they were people grew up in the city. It just kind of, you got soaked in the American culture. So there wasn't many shock. For me, the one thing that really shocked me when I got here was just the freedom. Like, you were able to do whatever you want at any time in the day. You could go to IHOP at 3 o'clock in the morning, where this was a shocking thing for me because I came from a country that had a curfew at 5 o'clock. So this was just, you can go and do whatever you want. And there was always something that you can go to. So it was just different environment. For me, it just felt like an alien landing in a planet Earth, and you're just discovering things that you never seen before.
I've been teaching him, Jason, the wonders of the late night whiskey bars here in North Carolina. Back when we could go out, right?
Yeah, definitely. No, but back then I used to go to IHOP. It wasn't even bars or anything.
Yeah, but now you go to a nice whiskey jazz club.
Yeah, definitely.
With a bunch of veterans. Good time.
Yeah, that's different now. But back in the day, I used to go to IHOP. That was like my biggest thing. You know, in 2008, I would go to IHOP and just sit there.
That's funny.
And I couldn't believe my eyes. Like something was open at 4 o'clock in the morning. I was like, wow, like this is just insane. And I would tell people back home in Iraq, I'd be like, do you believe there's something open right now at 4 o'clock? And they wouldn't believe it. They were like, things are open during the night. I'm like, and they're like, is there anybody eating during the night? I'm like, yeah, there's plenty of people. So it's just different life. And, you know, It's just when you don't have something and all of a sudden you see it happening, it's just a different feeling.
Jason, your mic's out.
There you are. Should probably turn that on. Usually you don't want to hear me breathing. I was saying I'm thinking about IHOP right now and how great it would be to go and get some over easy eggs. And I don't like to pass up a meal. That's the truth. So what do you like to do for fun now, man? I mean, like, now that you could actually take a step back, I mean, is it video games? Is it anything? Or it's got to be different to be able to have that freedom. Raising kids is fun, but.
You know, for me, things are really different. You know, like every veteran out there that I worked with are into like shooting guns, doing things. Once I came here, I had nothing to do with guns anymore. I didn't want to have a gun. I mean, I went from having like 6 guns in Iraq to having nothing. And it was it for me. You know, like I just didn't want to do anything after that, anything violent or anything. So I think it's different for me. You know, like for me, I haven't been to a range in years. I haven't done the things that I used to do back, because when you're in a war for 5 years every single day, you just kind of get it. You have enough with this. So I kind of got into more of a filmmaking, video editing, all the stuff. I started learning skills that I never knew, never had before. So because my passion before becoming whatever I became in Iraq was I went to film school and during the 90s, but unfortunately my family couldn't afford the transportation. So I ended up going to a regular like high school. And my dream was to actually go into acting school and become either an actor or a director. And my life took a different turn when 2003 war broke out, and I just ended up taking a different path. So I put all my focus now after coming to the U.S. into learning skills that I was never able to, you know, achieve in Iraq. So I got into like filmmaking and editing and all kind of stuff. And you know, every single day I try to teach myself a new skill.
Yeah, on the show, we've had a bunch of actors. We've had like Max Martini's been on, D.B. Sweeney, a bunch of Hollywood types. And man, I love it. I love the acting community. I love that it's the entertainment value. And even if it's like, you know, like lately I do these 30-second streams a day of just stupid, goofy crap because it's a nice relief. And yeah, it's nice to entertain people, man. And that's why I do the show every night. I just like entertaining people.
Definitely have special feelings.
Yeah, man. And this is a good time for you to kind of really practice your art, like shorts, do like little 5-6 minute shorts, videos.
I directed my own film. I don't know if you noticed that.
No, I didn't, man.
Yeah, I directed my own film. So I end up directing my own film. I had actually directors and producers from Hollywood that approached me first about doing the project. And then they really wanted to just kind of script it in their own way, which didn't fit what I stood for. So I decided to actually, you know, go to school, learn how to really direct films and learn the editing process, everything. And I end up directing my own film.
That's awesome, man. And then, I could definitely see you doing a lot more about that in the future because it's really good, man.
Do you have a YouTube channel?
Now I have a YouTube channel. Actually, I'm working on if you see this background behind me, yeah. I am working on starting a specific podcast. It's not like more of a guest podcast. Yeah. I'm still involved in the Middle East. You know, I still have intelligence sources that are still working among the enemy. I've been going to a lot of different podcasts like Drinking Pros, all the other podcasts, Valuetainments, all the big kind of podcasts in the countries that I've been providing them with info of what's happening in the Middle East. So I'm actually decided that I was going to do a specific podcast that's going to be focused on the Middle East terrorism and sex trafficking. And I wanted to bring something that the American people are not used to hearing, or things that they're not able to see through the news.
I like that. I like where you're going with that, because my next book is on human trafficking, but it's domestic.
Nice. Yeah, and definitely. Because the numbers kind of got my attention. You know, the numbers are horrific in this country when it comes to sex trafficking. I know people are freaking out over COVID-19, but the sex trafficking, actually, the numbers are extremely hitting. And I think I have friends that are involved in this sector. Mm-hmm. And the numbers are scary.
Yeah, we'll have to talk offline once we get off tonight. Because right now, nobody realizes what exactly is going on with sex trafficking.
I know nothing about it. I mean, I'm your typical civilian. I go to my job. I do whatever I do with my podcast, but I don't know anything about it. And I know a lot of people, it's on their radar right now, and they have a lot of – I just saw an article that came out. They're taking a bunch of wounded warriors and turning them into – I guess you would call it cyber police.
They're turning them into like a cyber sex predator hunters kind of thing.
You guys should read my article, man. I wrote one for Town Hall about it. Actually, it was a Town Hall or Washington Examiner. I think I actually wrote both of them about the Hero program. It's a human exploitation
rescue operative. The Hero program.
Yeah,
man. We'll talk about that when we go offline here in a minute. But Hominy, man, I really appreciate you coming on. And you have a really great perspective on just keeping mentally straight, man. Because, you know, coming back from the war, a lot of us have come back from the war. You've had a different perspective on it because your life has been surrounded by it. You've been in it for years. It's almost like you're one of the World War II fighters where you go to war for like 5 years and you come back.
Yeah.
Then couple that with growing up with it. So you have a different mental perspective. That's one of the big reasons I wanted to have you on the show, so people can get a great perspective of what it's like, a quick 20 something minute snapshot of your life. I really, really want people to watch The Terrorist Whisper, find out more about you, and follow you everywhere they can, because you have so much more to say than what we can get out in 26 minutes. One thing I ask everybody is, actually my daughter came up with this question. My daughter used to co-host with me. She's 10 and, she's doing kids stuff now all the time, man. But if you could go back in time and change anything, not with your life, like you specifically, but anything in time and change, what would you change?
You said anything, like not my life experience, correct?
Yeah. Not your life.
The one thing that I would change, which I actually changed already in Iraq, it's education. You know, education is extremely important for people in those countries. They need education because they're being misled for so many years, and it's hard for you to fix a whole entire generation. So that's why we went through fighting for the first, first 6 years in Iraq, whatever. Yeah. We went through an extreme violent fighting against people and in a, until that generation kind of grew out of it. That's when, you know, Iraq started seeing little peace more and more, until this young generation in Iraq who grew up under free education and end up, I mean, a free education as a free education out of, there's no hate, there's no propaganda, just, growing up and, learning to love and not hate the rest of the world as they used to broadcast to me when I was a kid. So, you know, I'm a guy that I can compare myself to. I grew up under like what's looked like a Nazi regime. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you were taught to hate everybody that's outside of your country. So the education is a really important aspect. And if I would go back, I would try to enhance education for Iraq or the rest of the Middle East to change that mentality.
You know what? That's probably, you know what? I don't care about all you other guests that came on. That was the best response to me. So yet everybody does something like generic, like, killing Hitler or something like that.
Kill Hitler, baby.
Killed Hitler. But hey, man, Sully, you got any last questions or anything?
No. Hey, one thing that's very respectable about this guy right here, if I can point to him, so many people have come to him and said, hey, let me market, let me do your thing. Come on with us. And he's like, no, I'm doing this on my own. And he does a lot of stuff on his own. And that's very respectable. It kind of shows how much of a hard worker here he is. And is a good friend. I'd give you a hug if you didn't have COVID.
Oh, geez. Hey, Sully, did you get a haircut, bro? What's going on there?
I rarely wear a hat. It's I've been working all day.
Okay, I thought you
buzzed
it at first.
No, I still have hair.
He's been more quarantined than the Ayatollah of Iran himself.
That's right. Yeah, I've been following the rules, man. I'm in medicine. I don't want to give it. That's the problem. I'm afraid I have it. I don't want to give it up.
I'm afraid you have it too, bro. I'm looking at you like I heard you cough a little while ago.
A little peakish.
Okay, guys, I'm going to pull you off real quick. If you can hold on line, I'm going to do my outro. Hey, everybody. Thanks for joining me tonight. Great guests again. I'm absolutely amazed by everybody that joins me. Great stories. Incredible. I do want to give a shout out to Hammity tonight. Check out Terrorist Whisper. It's streaming right now. You can rent it $3.99, 48 hours. Come on, you got 48 hours to watch it. What are you doing this weekend? I don't think you're going outside, right? But hey, check it out. Check out that. But I also want to give a shout out to the organization I'm very directly involved with is Operation. I mean, it's Outperform, Serve, and Develop OSD. We are OSD. We provide an ecosphere for veterans, especially in a time right now. We utilize such things as video games, Xbox, and all that other stuff. We really need your support right now because there are a lot of veterans in need. And a lot of military servicemen and women deployed right now that are also supported by OSD. So please check us out. Thank you and have a great night and be safe.